grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Une émission par Nadia Lichtig.
Today, we continue our conversation with educator, writer and artist Randy Lee Cutler and artist Ingrid Koenig, both professor and associate professor at Emily Carr University in Vancouver. We talk about their art science project, Leaning Out of Windows, the four-year interdisciplinary project developed between 2016 and 2020. The project explored how artists and physicists can collaborate to rethink the ways knowledge is produced and shared. The conversation was picked up midway with Randy and then joined by Ingrid.
Like, I think in medicine as well as in, you know, physics or science, like taking a course in ethics and understanding the relationship of these high level ideas and this kind of desire to heal people with the ethical implications of it, which could just mean bedside manner for a doctor, but also anticipating the implications of your research, right? You know, like, but we don't do that.
Yeah. This is something that Bruno Latour raised when he said, we have never been modern. And he talked about these silos within our education. And so you don't connect exactly the impact of what you're doing or say the impact of something in one part of the world because of something that was working on somewhere else. And so this siloing is what keeps us back in the dark ages.
Well, I think it's also, we think about the politics right now and we think that each of us individually can't do anything. And I listened to a podcast with Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway. And one of the things Scott says is the only thing people understand is the capitalism. So basically, stop buying from Amazon, stop subscribing to AI, stop all of these things. And then people, you know, but it's like we all have in very small ways an opportunity to do something if we think about how we're connected. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I wonder if there's a mathematical equation that could put all of this into a very neat picture of these very paradoxical kind of contradictory ways that humans function in a way that's both constructive and deconstructive at the same time. And, you know, to look at that big picture that only maybe through math one can do.
Or a diagram, you know, I think I can imagine a diagram that could capture this in like either a historical sense, which makes me think of a spiral, or the Venn diagram of the overlapping concerns. Yeah, I think part of the problem is we don't discuss it. We don't communicate it with each other. So we don't, you know, even like thinking about working with grad students, you know, I have a cohort, but they're also concerned with their individual practices, which we understand, but also it's about who you are in relation to each other, how you support each other for overt networking opportunities in the future, but also the care that is necessary to even be present back in your own body.
Coming back to, you know, the process of Leaning Out of Windows project, where there were always like 25 artists, for example, but in the third iteration, we also included the scholars and the physicists. So even though they were teams, and the work that we see at the end that arises from all the teams and we're showing it all, we can see it as a group, like as a, you know, a massive cluster of ideas that rise out of a theme like invisible forces. And from that, you can see the reality of what humans face. So even though they might take up the theme of magnetism, within that, because of what the individuals bring from their own knowledge practices, it brings up alchemy. It brings up fermentation, kinship, undulating fields, surface tensions, opposing forces. And as soon as you do that, you go into a political realm as well. So there's not a kind of a purity of some, magnetic element, because our brains and our knowledge practices bring all of our life experiences and all of those knowledges together. Or you take, the invisible force of dark matter or interactions, and then another group working with an anthropologist will start to take up the history of racism and those impacts, the loss of languages, colonization, genocide, climate change. So immediately, the kind of, not to use, a good, like a mushroom cloud, maybe is not a good analogy, but maybe a spider web that just starts to knit together. And it's not the individual work here that it, I mean, it's interesting, the individual work, but it's when you look at all of the works in relation to each other, all connected, that's when you start to see the impact of a collective research into an idea. So in a way, if you think of a particle accelerator and the collisions of particles that happen in this way, and in that metaphor, in that kind of collision, we see all of these profound impacts, I think.
I was wondering if you could speak about phase two of your project, where you had different groups. You had the blind stream, you had the dialogical stream, the tandem stream, and the fieldwork stream. Maybe you can introduce the idea of how this came up.
It's not as if it was suddenly like we designed the whole thing, which we did, but I think it was a kind of evolution of the practice, because Ingrid had been working with Triumph and sort of seeing, bringing her students into it and bringing, I think, a strategies, Ingrid, that you had understood would make sense for the students. And I think part of it was, I think we came, I don't think you had a blind stream when you worked with students, right?
No.
So I think the blind stream was particularly interesting because each of these streams had different ways that they were interacting with their physicists. And we thought, okay, what if the artist doesn't know the theme? And so what are they picking up? Because I think, as Ingrid was sort of suggesting, there's all kinds of things that are happening on the periphery or underneath or in the atmosphere of the conversation. So I think the blind stream was particularly interesting for how people managed not knowing while knowing that there was something that everybody else was addressing in some way. Does that make sense, Ingrid?
Yes, yeah. I would go back a bit to how we wound up with all of those different models of interaction within that phase as well, though, because it actually goes back to our in conversing with scientists and how they visualize models of interactions, that the Feynman diagrams were introduced to us. So Richard Feynman, the physicist, had a way of diagramming for other physicists, a more simplified way of talking about particle behavior that did not involve mathematics. And so we started to take those up, and you see the how electrons kind of come together, and then they form energy or light. So all of these kinds of impacts and different variations. So that was a way to think about how our individuals as particles would be interacting and what would emerge. And then one of the physicists said to us, when you're designing this, let's try to introduce as much entropy as possible so that we get a broader kind of sampling of ways of interacting. So that's where this notion of the dialogical came in, where we had one-on-one assignment, one artist partnered with one scientist, and they could speak to each other over a period of, say, 3 months, and then that work, whatever was came out of that work, was transferred to a new partnership of an artist and a scientist, and I think it was like three times over that that happened, and we had numerous people in that. The tandem one was always two artists and two scientists always in conversation with each other. So it was a bit more of a, kind of comparison. I got this, what did you think? And so on, and more conversing that way. The blind stream was one that was inspired by two German artists that we were also collaborating with early on. And they had this project that they were working with, both with professional artists and in the Berlin Art School, where they would introduce, have one person respond to a topic. It wasn't necessarily a science topic, and then it would go through a series of disciplines and always change. So a little bit like the surreal game. Yeah. And so that was really interesting, to try that out in that way. And we always made sure we had different disciplines as well. So like a visual artist would go over to the photographer, that would go over to a sound artist. So very different ways of taking that up. And then we could look at what kinds of things carry over in that moment, and why.
Let me just understand how this cadavre ski worked.
An individual went to the science seminar. They did not have anyone to consult with. So they really basically made their work out of a response to the first seminar on antimatter. And that work went over to the next artist after a month or so. Each kind of grouping or stream had a different time element involved as well. So some had longer time, some had shorter time, so on.
I also just want to add that so one of the things that we did was articulate, partly because of the website that we wanted to put together and make sure that we shared it with people. So each phase had a process design. And so we would meet with the physicists and have conversations, and out of that, come up with this idea, as Ingrid was saying, responding to what we learned about Feynman diagrams. And then I believe we share the process design with the physicists, Ingrid.
Yes, yeah. We had a few back and forth meetings, definitely until we came to the one that we all agreed, yes, this one is the one.
And I really, I think that process was really important because it was process, right? It was a lot of conversation back and forth. And then Ingrid and I, meanwhile, were talking about which artists we would invite and learning about which physicists would be involved. Many of them were postdocs. So we had to rely on Triumph, I think it was, I can't remember their title, but the communications person who was a dialogue with everybody at that organization, and bringing physicists in from different research areas, theoretical, experimental, communications, and then trying to like bringing in different artists in their disciplines, as Ingrid was describing, but also bringing in different kinds of physicists as well. So it was, and then we Ingrid made these beautiful drawings that articulate the flow of interactions so that we could better understand, I think also as artists, to visualize what we were articulating and not just describing it.
And we had one other stream in that grouping, and that was my class. So I taught a class, and in that there were like 17 students, and we did a variation. So it was like all of those streams in one term, and we would do it in a very quick kind of order, to see where, what would happen if you do it, if you just speed it all up and you have a kind of a micro example of all of those streams. So we also did a blind stream, and that one was with one of my colleagues in Berlin, Margit Schild. She was teaching a art and science group at the Berlin Art School, Art University. And so through a platform, like they made a film around the idea of I guess it was antimatter. They did a film, and then my students had to respond to that and kind of, work along that way. So there are a lot of impacts as it went through. And in that one, the scientists, so I had like a group of five physicists who were on call for my students. They're basically on call. And so some of them would come in and give talks to the students. And yeah, it was a very nice, bubbly kind of cooking class around all of this.
And I think also this idea of how much time you give artists in particular was interesting because, many artists take a long time to develop a project. And we were asking them to do a quick turnaround. Here's some really complicated ideas. We'd like you to respond to it. And I think some people were really resistant to that because they, are more precious about what they want to put out into the world, whereas others were more receptive to this very kind of fluid experiment. So I think it was a lot of individual approaches to art making that I feel like we learned about, and that there's many different sensibilities that are there that I found really interesting in terms of the dynamic of artists reaching out to us and sort of expressing their anxieties or their excitement but everybody did it very differently, right? But I also wanted to say that so once we figured out these process designs, we would have a science seminar. And so we had the first one at Triumph, and Ingrid and I gave an opening presentation about the project, and then different physicists gave I think there were like 20 minutes, maybe, presentations on, in this case, the theme of antimatter. And it was so amazing because here you are at Triumph, where there is a particle accelerator underneath you, and these images that are gorgeous as images, but also the physicists articulating it with a lot of detail, right? So each level of detail and imagery and explanation and equation, you can just feel the group of artists just sort of like moving in their seat, like, what have I gotten myself into? And it was great because they were collectively sharing that response, right?
And the different communications, say from a theoretical physicist talking about antimatter versus an experimental physicist, where it was much more difficult to kind of move, it just went, over people's heads. And yet, still, it's like you grasp some things, and it's interesting to think about, well, what is it that you grasp onto that is a kind of some kind of opening for you to enter that? And an engineer also working, and how he would explain these ideas. So it was really great to hear their own languages and how they presented in these different ways. And then they also had us perform antimatter, the phenomena of antimatter. So the communications with some of the scientists decided, okay, we'll get the artists to actually be particles of matter and antimatter. So they set us up with a game, and they had, each one of us had something under our seat that was either going to see, was that blue and red or something. So one of us was matter, one of us was antimatter. And then we would have to find each other. And then we would, in a sense, theoretically, we would disappear. We would pop out of existence because it was a way of taking it into our own bodies, in a sense of what this idea is and why it's such a huge a discourse, and one of the biggest collaborations in the world is about researching matter and antimatter, because at the beginning of the universe, there was equal amounts of both, and when they come together, they just produce energy. So there's no mass, and so what happened to all that antimatter? Now we're in a positive matter universe, and what happened? That's the question. It's not understood, and yet they can create antimatter, like at CERN, and then they look at, well, how does it affect with gravity? What are all the ways that it behaves? So it was amazing to be able to put part of this largest collaboration in the world that keeps going, and then to also be, performing it to take and get it in another sense.
How did the artists come to you? You said before, Randy, that you chose them, but maybe there were artists also knocking at your door.
I think it was, well, the first one, people didn't really know what we were doing. It's only when we did the first one on antimatter and had an exhibition that, yes, lots of people approached us. In the first instance, it was people that we either really were excited about their practices. Or we thought they might have an engagement with a collaborative process. Or we can see the kind of scientific curiosity in their work. So Ingrid and I would come together and make up a list of artists and then talk about like why we were putting them forward. And I think a lot of it was they didn't need to have an immediate relationship to scientific ideas. But I think what happened was once they got involved in the process, they realized that it was in some ways accessible to them, right? We wanted a range of practices. And one of the ones that stands out to me is Evan Siebens, who is a dance artist, choreographer, filmmaker. And she made an absolutely gorgeous film in response. And it was just so interesting. In some ways, because she is an artist who's been working collaboratively as a dance artist, filmmaker, professional, that she has this kind of collaborative nature. But it was such a gorgeous film in trying to understand. And, you know, one of the things she did was just kind of create a mirror image to represent matter and antimatter and flipped it again. And so to me, that's one of the standouts. But we did try to invite a range of different artists from what you've described, people working in 2D and 3D, in music, in time. Other, what am I
Sound,
missing, Ingrid?
sound, as
Sound.
well. Evan Stephen, the other aspect that was interesting in her dance performance, she was looking at time parity and then taking it into the most immediate kind of physical aspect of being in an aging woman's body, and so that also became part of that work. So it was a complex kind of build of different ideas within that. The sound work, Giorgio Magnenzi was partnered with Art Olson, who was working with antimatter at CERN. And so Giorgio translated the sound of the chip, the chirping sound, not the chip, the chirping sound of antihydrogen. So they were able to, because they can take these ideas and they get the data from creating the antihydrogen, and he was able to then interpret that through the numbers into an actual sound. And these were through series of wooden resonators. They filled the gallery, so you had this very strange kind of chirping sound. So that was, very strange thing. And then that work was transferred to a painter who was sort of grasping onto this notion of the wooden panels, but then looking at antimatter from all of these strange kinds of ways that we are in the world. And the influx of imagery and the buildup of almost like chirps of imagery, one might say. And she wound up painting like 85 wooden panels with these amazing, they're not images, they're some of them are abstract, some of them are material, and very experimental, sort of just letting the material have its way. And letting that be. So in a sense, following the process, letting the process lead you.
But also being informed, I think, for Marina Roy's work by climate change and resource extraction. So she was using bitumen in her painting process as a commentary on resource extraction. She was also referring to alchemy as a kind of precursor of that kind of transformation of materials. That whole piece was called Dirty Clouds. And like Ingrid said, it was about 85 works. Installed in a cloud-like constellation in front of Giorgio's work, which had these wooden panels, which had the chirping sounds. And then that was, so went from Giorgio to Marina and then to Mimi Gelman, who is an indigenous artist who was working with indigenous cosmologies and responding to the cosmological within Marina's work and bringing it into her. She made, I think, three drawings of a kind of,
I would say six.
cosmological six, it was six. Six drawings of the sky with mythological references and astronomical references. And so these three were installed together And I think what happened, as Ingrid was saying, was that they demonstrated the way that these ideas are always in dialogue with each other, but they were manifest and visualized within this incredible dialogue work.
And that work of Mimi's was so profound to see the overlay of indigenous science with our Western science. So looking at the kind of shared imagery for like modeling a chemical aspect to a mythological to how those things are can actually be seen in relation to each other through her drawings. So that was a wonderful way to bring us through the complexity, bringing all of those, like from the hydrogen chirp to extraction to the overlay of indigenous science knowledge. Another artist in the tandem group, Olivia, she was pregnant at the time, and so she made a massive umbilical cord. That had light. So it was like this sense of, the flow of light, but it was also an umbilical cord. So it had this aspect of generating life in a sense. But it was like this very, very large, kind of almost spiral kind of tube-like element that was installed. So again, very different way of working with the notion of the origins of life as well.
Yeah,
And just
thinking about I was just looking at our original grant application, Ingrid, and I have this right in front of me as you were talking. I want to read it. Strategies of embodiment and metaphorical and artistic expressions of languages implied by the nature of matter and energy are key to the collaborative relationship between art and science. Bharat introduces the concept of interaction and the fluidity of materialization through our bodily entanglements. Through interaction, our bodies remain entangled with those around us. That kind of makes, as you're describing that work, it makes me think about these ideas that we were always thinking about.
Yeah.
Listening to you, it just opens up so many ideas. I have the impression that this project is irrigating science with a component which is maybe the human part in it. And this entanglement is maybe something which we need so much these days in our society.
Yeah. One of the things with the first phase, looking, I did a map at the end to look at all the different things that emerge and all that entanglement that you're talking about, and the complexities of the world that came into the work. And but I also coded it to see what is the science part of what came out and what is the non-science, the art, I would just call it non-science, let's say. And I found, this, there was still a way, there was not as much science in the actual emerging works. Let's say they went into all of these other aspects of our world. So when we finished that stream and what we thought, let's do this again, because this was amazing, but let's do it differently and see what happens. And so we did that, and we, very different way of interacting. The third time around, we did it again, because we still wanted to test out another variation of interactions. And the third time around was the one where I found, when I did the map at the end, I found way more of an integration of science and non-science, like all of the other aspects of knowledge practices, way more entangled. So I feel like in the third round where we, and that was during COVID, amazingly. We were able to bring in, because it was COVID, and so we used more of, before we had local artists. Now we thought, well, we can just open it up. So we had more international artists as well. But they were able to also, even though they were in groups, they could cross-pollinate. We had a central repository where everyone could deposit the documentations of their meetings, their discussions, their artwork. So anyone could go through that. So I think in doing that, we had a way more integrated form of knowledge practices coming together. So that was a really eye-opening aspect. I think one of the, best things about all of this was the conversation, this notion of conversation to open up across practices. And one of the physicists I worked with, David Morrissey, when he was talking about forces themselves, and he said, think about these forces as they're talking to each other. And that was such an impactful thing for me in as a researcher, but also as an artist, as in my own work. And he explained, if you didn't have forces, nothing would talk to anything else, and everything would just pass through everything else. And so, and he said, like, and also in this research, you start with an idea, you wind up somewhere else, and in that being somewhere else, you uncover complexity, and there's so much branching. And it really, in a sense, coming back to garden talk, is how we are in this cosmos, I think.
I want two things I wanted to share. One is when you were describing Nadia, the kind of like the articulation of artwork and what was expressed. I think one of the important things was for me was understanding what is research for an artist. And research is in the studio, research is in these conversations that were so powerful, research is in exhibition planning, curating, thinking, noticing, walking. And so I feel like these entanglements that we're describing, the research allowed for activities and processes and strategies that aren't conventionally understood as research to be folded into it so that we as artists could understand how we are in dialogue with scientists and physicists in particular, but also, and I guess part of it is because I work so much with grad students, understanding what is artistic research and how is it manifest in ways that are not always easy to articulate as qualitative or quantitative research, right? So I feel like that was just really for me eye-opening, understanding how we are working together, learning from each other, and that research is happening everywhere, right? Also, I just want to share with you this. This is again from our grant. This is a quote from Barad, which I think is beautiful. Not only subjects, but also objects are permeated through and through with their entangled kin. The other is not just in one's skin, but in one's bones, in one's belly, in one's heart, in one's nucleus, in one's past and future. This is as true for electrons as it is for brittle stars, as it is for the differently constituted human.
Yeah, and going back to I would talk about Barad, and she wrote about Niels Bohr, the quantum physicist in the 1920s, and he had he was trying to think about how to communicate quantum physics, which for one thing is impossible to understand even as a physicist, and then how to communicate in a how would you communicate that in a non-mathematical way, and so he talked about through metaphor, through analogy, and through the arts, through poetry. That was a way that one might be able to approach something that is sort of unthinkable and gain new perspective. So I think when Karen Broad wrote about that, it was like an invitation, yes, artists taking up these ideas, and how do we then enter new perspectives on these ideas, and what do these ideas, these unthinkable ideas, look like as they are moved through a material practice, through a conceptual practice, through the poetry in its largest sense of the word. And I'll quote Muriel Rukeyser, who said, "The world is not made up of atoms. It's made up of stories." Just a really beautiful way of describing how we exist, how we actually manifest the basic reality of our phenomena, of how we exist.
Grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Grammaire fantôme. Une émission par Nadia Lichtig.